exporting the Maine brand to markets around the world. Maine exports a huge variety of products. Seafood, of course, lobster remains king, but also aircraft parts, popsicle sticks, gelato, bean boots, wild blueberries, craft beer, medical supplies, seaweed, and so much more. In fact, according to the Maine International Trade Center, more than 2,000 Maine companies export goods and services to other countries, with a total value of $2.7 billion. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will learn more about the emerging markets for Maine goods, what to think about, and what help is available if your company wants to start exporting to other countries, what new trade tariffs might mean for Maine, and what the future holds for the Maine brand. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Does your Maine product deserve a wider market? Wondering how you might export it overseas? More than 2,000 Maine companies are already selling abroad, and today we're going to discuss the export opportunities for Maine companies. With me today, Wade Merritt, who is president of the Maine International Trade Center, Emily Lane, international sales manager for Luke's Lobster Seafood Company, and James Morin, COO and president of sales at Flowfold. Our guests are here in the studio with me. As always, we want to hear from you. What questions do you have about exporting overseas? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Facebook page. And a quick note, Maine Public's Jennifer Mitchell has produced a terrific series called It Can Get There From Here, which highlights some Maine companies that have found success exporting their products. And if you'd like to watch or listen to that series, you can find it on the Maine Calling Facebook page or our website. I should say, if you'd like to read or listen to that series, you can find it on the Maine Calling Facebook page or website. So welcome to all of you. And I'm going to start with you, Wade, for a big picture. Give me an overview. How is Maine doing in the export sector?
Maine's been doing great. And thanks for having me on, by the way. Maine's been doing great. We're about a $3 billion export economy, which represents about 5% of what the state produces. That's right on target for the national average, where we expect to be. And you know, the next question always is, what are we sending out? We're still very much a natural resource-based state, so we're doing a lot in lobster and seafood, which is why I'm sure Emily is sitting next to me today, but also in the forest products industries and products like wild blueberries and potatoes.
Mm-hmm.
But then also some technology-based products and consumer goods like James's company, lots of different things.
And I understand Canada is number one, but to, you know, company we are exporting to, but that numbers 2, 3, 4, and 5 have kind of shifted a little bit over the years.
They have. It's really interesting. You know, I've been doing this for a long time. I started in this job in 1997, and China, I think, was out of the top 20, actually, at that point. I think we were 21st or 22nd, and has steadily moved up until it's hit the second spot this year. And in those early days, we were talking a lot about exports to Europe. Now we're talking a lot about exports to Asia. And it's been an interesting change in the landscape.
It's so interesting, yeah. Kind of counterintuitive, because China's just so far.
China is so far, but it's just such a huge market with a lot of different opportunities in it, and has been receiving, obviously, a lot of press over the 20 years that I've been doing this, of this is the next frontier for American businesses and for companies from Maine.
All right, Emily, I'm going to turn to you. Luke's Lobster Seafood Company, I understand, has been exporting for a long time. Tell us your story. How did the company get into exporting, and how has your experience changed over that time?
Well, actually, we've just gotten into the export business. I've been exporting myself for over 25 years, predominantly with Maine lobster products. We got into export because we felt that it was time to start diversifying our market base and that there were some huge opportunities internationally. Luke's Lobster Restaurant Group has recently opened 7 different lobster shacks in Japan and 2 in Taiwan. So we saw a great opportunity to start expanding our lobster company.
When you say recently, how recently?
I would say in the last year.
Wow.
We've done openings in Taiwan and in the last 2 years in Japan. So in tandem with that growth, we felt it was an excellent opportunity to start moving our products into the export arena.
Oh, so interesting. So you're not just exporting the product itself. You're exporting the whole idea of a lobster shack, Luke's Lobster, correct. Oh, how fun. And how's it going so far?
It's going very well. And obviously, we're marketing our brand. We are marketing the sourcing of sustainable seafood directly from coastal Maine communities and providing fresh quality products in innovative product forms.
All right. Well, James, what about your story? First, tell me what Flowfold is. I know you came in with a very cool-looking backpack on today.
Thank you. Thank you. So Flowfold, in its very basic form, we actually started by making wallets out of recycled sailcloth. So at our heart, we're three kids from Maine and our group from Maine that is building a business around the idea of sustainability and just doing things right. So now, of course, we're not just a wallet company. We make bags and packs. We even recycle climbing rope and make dog leashes for our four-legged friends too. So we do a little bit of everything now.
Okay, and how long has Flowfold, one, been around, and two, been exporting? And where have you been exporting to?
So technically, Flowfold has been around since 2010 when Charlie and Devin, the two co-founders, graduated from the University of Maine. But we didn't go full-time until we were able to really put some resources and energy behind it. That was back in November of 2015, which coincidentally lined up with when L.L. Bean started to carry Flowfold. So that was kind of our tipping point, if you will. After that, we fell, sort of accidentally into exporting. And when I say that, I mean, we were approached by international companies that saw the product, saw the high-tech materials that were, fun colored and unique designs, and they said, we think there's a market for that. Can we have your product? So it wasn't really a cold call scenario. They reached out to us.
Oh, isn't that interesting? Wait, how common is that for the company to be approached by someone else in another country as opposed to saying, we want to try to get into another country,
Oh, it's very common.
Yeah?
In fact, to the point where we, at one point, and we'll be bringing it back, actually had a program series of things that we were doing at the Trade Center called The Accidental Exporter for that exact reason of companies like Flowfold getting an order all of a sudden from overseas and saying, oh my, I've only ever sold to, people in Maine or even people in different parts of the U.S., and now all of a sudden I have this order from Japan. What do I do with it? That is a very common way in which smaller companies do it. I would say probably in some respects more common than the ones that kind of go into it with a plan of here's what we're going to do to get from A to B.
Oh, isn't that interesting? Because I would have thought that it's a company who feels as though, okay, my domestic market is saturated, so where can I go next? But that's really the less usual.
Well, and I think that it's, that's probably the traditional model. I mean, like I said, I've been doing this for a while, and when we first started this, there was it was difficult to go international. It was, especially at an early stage in the company's life, the market research that we were doing at that time really involved like photocopying pages from books and saying, here are the people who might be interested in buying your products. Good luck. Fast forward 20 years, you got the internet. You've got people who are able to find a company like Flowfold online and say, well, this is really cool. Maybe we should try to buy that. And companies that are really early in the process are exporting a lot sooner.
James, I understand. I was going to say early on, since we're talking only a couple of years, there's not really an early on, but there was sort of one big major mistake.
Oh, well, not just one. You're giving us far too much credit. It's you're learning. And as a retail company with the struggling sort of domestic retail landscape, we had to adapt and overcome. No one is going to no one's going to care if we complain about bankruptcies in the U.S., right? And so we had no choice when they reached out to us. It was an opportunity that we need to evaluate, but that doesn't mean we got it right the first time. And an example of that is Japan. The first batch of wallets we sent out were our Vanguard sailcloth wallet it's tried and true and been tested 1,000 times for U.S. dollars. It didn't even fit the Japanese yen. And, so those are things that we just didn't even think about at the time because we were, they were still on Peaks Island, Maine, and we're sending a handful of wallets out every week at our local post office. So trial and error, and we survived, and now obviously we're more understanding of what other markets outside of domestic markets need.
So you customize wallets for the size of the bills.
Well, at the end of the day, we basically, the market is different. We have larger minimums to ship internationally. They order in larger quantities. So if we not only customize product design, but product colors, the branding in itself, and that gives us a unique opportunity to test things in international markets. And if they do well, we can even bring them back domestically.
Okay. Emily, any similar stories for you all?
I think that the international appeal for Luke's Lobster is that it certainly continues to focus on our core principles of vertical integration, sustainability, traceability from ocean to plate, and providing the freshest quality seafood. We've had a huge response in both Japan and Taiwan. Lines, I understand, are around the corner.
So no good mistakes.
People really want to have quality product, and they really value the freshness and the story that we tell about the harbor to plate.
Okay, so nothing similar. No,
At this point, no.
Okay, wait. How important is the Maine brand, and is it more important in some countries than in others?
Oh, I think it sells very well overseas. You know, this is something that we've been talking about a lot, and Emily just kind of hit on it right there, is that Maine globally has a reputation for quality. We have a reputation for quality products, quality workmanship, craftsmanship, and we do very well in hitting the niches that we're aiming for.
And so is that reputation everywhere? I mean, I know that Maine exports to China, South Korea, Australia, Europe. Is it worldwide, or in some places do they still need a bit of an education?
Well, I think, you know, places like China is so massively huge that they obviously are going to need a little bit of an education on where we are. But, you know, Europe, Canada, places like Japan and Korea, absolutely. They recognize where Maine is and what that means.
I think we spend a lot of time. We certainly spend a lot of time with our managers in our restaurant group, both domestically and internationally, explaining to them the whole process of how we catch the product, how we process the product, and then how we are able to distribute it nationwide and internationally, but also involving chefs, distributors from other parts of the world who come to Maine, and we actually give them the Maine experience. We take them out in the lobster boat. We take them to a processing facility. We introduce them to restaurants and chefs in the area, and then we take them to coastal communities so they can really get a flavor of the industry itself and of Maine. So we're really selling the product, but we're also selling Maine, the pristine waters. The general perception of Maine internationally is that it's clean, there are no chemicals in products that are produced, and people really value that and want to pay sometimes a premium for those products. MSC certification as well as food quality standards are also very important.
What's MSC?
MSC is a Marine Stewardship Council. Mm-hmm. It's an organization based in the UK. And the Maine lobster fishery is currently MSC certified. It is sustainable. It's traceable.
And that's recognizable to a consumer in Japan?
It's recognizable to a consumer in Japan. It's also recognizable to a distributor in Australia or China. Very important in both Europe and in Asia in terms of having that certification. And also, you know, the food safety certification as well. People are very confident of where their food comes from if they're buying a U.S. product, particularly a Maine product.
Wait.
Well, I was just going to say that the Luke's restaurants in Asia are fantastic. I'll see if I can track down a photograph of it, because it's an interesting experience to find yourself. I visited the Luke's Lobster Shack in Tokyo, and it is a very fascinating experience to come out of the Tokyo Underground, which is the experience you expect it to be, with the skyscrapers everywhere. And find yourself sitting in a what looks like a coastal Maine lobster shack with the sign out front that says the lobsters were harvested in Millbridge, eating a lobster roll on a country kitchen bun and drinking Moxie, and you're in the heart of one of the largest cities in the world. It's a fascinating experience, and Luke's has done a fabulous job of translating Maine's brand into that market.
Well, and James, too, your product is not as directly Maine, but it's the product of a coastal state where people sail.
Yeah, I think, you know, for us, the key, obviously, is going to be high-quality products. If Made in Maine gets their attention, and then at the end of the day, the product's not selling or it's not a high quality, then that won't really matter, right? I think Made in the USA, it depends on, obviously, I think the market you're in and as well as the geography that you're in, but there's still a strong affinity for Made in America goods overseas. In some cases, and a little bit, this is, you know, it's sometimes... not disturbing, but sad. There's more of an affinity for Made in America goods outside of the U.S. than inside the U.S. And the U.S. consumer is only willing to spend about 10% more for a backpack made in the United States. And I can tell you, I can't make a backpack for 10% more than what I can make it overseas. So that's what's interesting to me is just kind of, in our case, doubling down on where our products are desired. And you look at the Yellow Bean in Tokyo, where our products are going to be sold, and the bean boots and the tote bags do extremely well there. And there's a reason for that.
Mm. Our phone number, if you'd like to join the conversation, 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We can't have this conversation, Wade, without talking about what's going on nationally, which is the president has... change the trade policy to put tariffs on certain goods, especially from China. China has retaliated. How is all of this affecting Maine products?
Well, I think we were lucky because we were not on the list in this first round. This was the round that just came out of 128 products that China had targeted for retaliation. These were primarily steel and aluminum products and some agriculture. Not a huge impact on us. You know, look, the trick with tariffs, as I've been saying over the last couple of weeks, the trick with tariffs is it's an important factor to companies being successful overseas, but it's not the only factor that allows them to be successful overseas. You've heard most of what how I'm feeling about this thing from Emily and from James, that the tariffs are important, but so is probably more so putting out a quality product and maintaining the relationships that the companies have set up in overseas markets. The transaction is not always about the tariff rates. And I think that the companies that kind of take the long view and are confident and maintain those relationships are going to continue to be successful overseas.
All right. Well, we do have to take a quick break. When we come back, your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Goodwill Northern New England, with a 10-year goal of helping 10,000 households build stable lives through work. GoodwillNNE.org. New England Rehabilitation Hospital of Portland, helping patients and their families after illness or injury. Learn more at NERHP.org. And Norris, helping businesses and schools stay safe through engineered security, life safety, and emergency communication systems. NorrisInc.com.
On the next Fresh Air, Madeleine Albright talks about her book, Fascism, A Warning. She writes, "Some may view this book and its title as alarmist. Good. We should be awake to the assault on democratic values that has gathered strength in many countries and is dividing America." Albright was the first woman Secretary of State. She was appointed by President Clinton. Join us.
And join us for Fresh Air this evening at 7 o'clock. An invasive insect that could kill all of Maine's ash trees and tear up the roots of tribal culture is right at the state's door. Maine is using every tactic known to keep the emerald ash borer at bay, but entomologists say it's only a matter of time before the battle is lost. We have a special Maine Public online report where you can learn more about what's at stake for Maine, including for the state's four Wabanaki tribes, at mainepublic.org. Click on the homepage link, the Scourge at Maine's Door, and search for Emerald Ash.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, Maine's Exports. In the studio with me, Emily Lane, International Sales Manager for Luke's Lobster Seafood Company. James Morin, COO and President of Sales for Flowfold. Wade Merritt, President of the Maine International Trade Center. We invite you to join the conversation. What are your questions about exporting internationally? Call 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Before we get to questions, though, Wade, I want to ask you, I understand we scheduled this program for a big day at the Maine International Trade Center. You've got some awards to announce.
Yeah, we do. Really excited to announce our winners of our International Trade and Investment Awards. They'll be presented at our major event of the year, which is Maine International Trade Day in Rockport on May 18th. But our exporter of the year this year is Maine Coast. They're an exporter of live lobster that's based down in York. Our service provider of the year is Planson International of New Gloucester. Very interesting story. They're in a red barn in New Gloucester, just down the road from Pineland, but they are a multimillion-dollar company that supplies IT equipment and services to schools and nonprofit and NGOs in over 150 countries around the world. It's a very cool story. Innovator of the year is Fiber Materials Incorporated of Biddeford that does things for things as diverse as rockets, a Formula One racing cars, and prosthetic limbs. And our foreign investor of the year is St. Croix Tissue down in Baileyville. So four very well-deserving companies that are doing some really great things for the state internationally.
And it's interesting because they are in different corners of the state. This is not a story of one part of Maine being the export center of Maine, is it?
No, it really is not. I keep coming back to the 20 years I've been doing this. I spent 10 of them working in our office in Bangor and covering the northern and eastern parts of the state. There are countless stories in the rural communities. So this is definitely not all about Cumberland County and Portland. This is companies all over the state are successful doing business internationally on a daily basis.
I'll start with an email from Jack, and this follows up on something we started talking about after the break. What are your guests' thoughts on the new tariffs and possibility of trade war? Are they worried? James, are you worried?
At the end of the day, if I'm basing my business model on any administration, whether it's Trump or the next administration, then in my opinion, I've already lost, right? I can't have a singular myopic view on what's going to happen. And if I'm dependent on tariffs, that's probably a bad precedent that I'm setting for the company. Meaning, if things change, I need to be able to adapt, and I don't want to be ignorant to the changes. Mm-hmm. But as of right now, we have sort of a system in place where if tariffs are going to increase and therefore decrease my ability to export, then hopefully the domestic sales are going to increase, or I can then move my sales more from a flowfold.com or Amazon or shift into international web models and not so much through distribution. So it's more about adapting than being scared of the change and being dependent on the change.
Emily, same thoughts?
I would echo that with James in terms of, the fact that you can't be stymied by these agreements. I also think that personal relationships come into play a lot here in terms of how we deal with our customers internationally. I have built over the last 25 years some significant relationships with distributors and retailers, and I have to think that those relationships working through with the customers is going to supersede any tariff restraint.
All right, we'll go to Jonathan, who's calling from Bangor. Hi, Jonathan, go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi, thanks for having me. I'm like saying hi to Wade and Emily. I know them quite well. We've had a lot of conversations about exporting. I'm curious for any of our panelists, in Maine's export infrastructure, what are we missing? Are we missing banking infrastructure? Do we need more investment from outside? Do we need to tweak our service providers so that we're providing the right services to the companies who want to export?
Hey, Jonathan. thanks for your question. I think that we often survey the companies that we work with, and I don't know that we mentioned this before, but the Trade Center is a membership-based organization with about 300 companies around the state that we work with. And then we probably, because of the public nature of our business, work with probably another 300 to 400 more in any given year. We do survey on that. The question, the answer always seems to come back that it's about logistics. Mm-hmm. It's about getting the product out of the state. And investments like what have happened here in Portland around AIMSCIP and being able to get things out by ocean container have certainly helped. But the number that I always like to pull out is that the most important piece of international trade infrastructure in this state is the Maine Turnpike. 60% of the products that leave the United States from the state of Maine exit the state over the turnpike. So the answer always comes back to logistics, and can you effectively and affordably get your product out of here and to the foreign buyer?
Emily, how are you getting live lobster to Asia as quickly as possible?
We're not selling live lobster. We only sell processed product. So we use AIMSCIP a great deal. We also ship out of Boston for.
And I'm going to stop. You
freight.
Guys have both mentioned AIMSCIP, and for people who aren't familiar, that's the Icelandic company that brings the barges into Portland now a couple times a week, correct? And
that's correct.
Thus connecting us to Europe as well, because the barges go to AIMSCIP's terminal in Iceland and then can continue on from there. Okay, I'm sorry. Emily,
that's
go
correct.
On.
And they also now offer weekly service to Europe. They also offer what we call LCL, less than container loads. So you can ship a pallet of product to a customer in Norway, Sweden, Germany, wherever in Europe. And you don't have to have them commit to a whole container of product. I think, too, and I've been chirping about this for many years, is the fact that we have a lack of food manufacturing here in Maine. And for many companies who wish to expand their value-added products, we have very limited facilities, small facilities that really aren't able to scale up meet the demands of mass production.
What would there be in another state that we don't have here? Because I think a lot of people think Maine has a really thriving food economy. What kind of thing are you talking about?
We have a thriving food economy, but I'm talking about food manufacturing, taking raw materials and actually making them into value-added products such as lobster cakes or lobster pot pies, lobster mac and cheese.
So something like barber foods, Wyman's, just a little bit.
We do this on a small scale. We have a lot of small companies that are doing chowders, soups, pot pies, mac and cheese, but we don't have a manufacturing base that can scale up to a large demand.
All right. How do you get your products out at Flowfeld?
Believe it or not, a lot of times we use what's called a forwarder, which basically is an organization that specializes in shipping overseas. And I think to answer Jonathan's question, one thing that I will say is I would implore the small businesses and even large businesses in Maine to sort of to take some initiative and kind of embrace a little bit of the risk. Meaning I think that, you know, one of the greatest things about Maine is we have this extremely humble and hardworking attitude. But when you know, Flowfold first started saying that we're going international, there was more cautious restraint from people when they were listening versus encouragement. Because there's not this worldly view, right? And I would suggest, you know, it's a simple mathematics game. If the margins work, if there's room, if you can make a product for five, normally sell it for 10, then it goes to me for 20, you need to feed one more person probably along that line to go international. It is the lowest margin business for Flowfold by a long margin, but it's probably one of our most strategically important initiatives because of a whole bunch of other reasons. They pay up front. I'm not put on terms. I'm not worried about Chapter 11. And so I would implore some businesses to take a chance, reach out. I reached out to Wade. I reached out to MITC. They for free, and I'm sorry if I'm putting this on MITC, but they did a report for Flowfold on our top 10 most desirable markets, and then it was up to me to go out and sell to them. And those resources are available. MITC, if I could go on a mountain and just scream about MITC, I would. And this is not because he's in the room. They are helping us get all over the world, and they're doing it at a low to no cost for small companies in Maine.
So, Wade, what do you offer? A small company. I'm a small business owner. I'm listening to Maine Calling right now as I'm stitching up a quilt or putting jelly in a jar. What can you do for me? How can you get me around the world?
I'm blushing. Thanks, James.
Welcome.
Well, I mean, what our kind of our bread and butter service has been to work with small businesses all over the state to get them ready to go international. In James's case, we were able to put together a pretty comprehensive market research report that said, you know, here are the 10 top markets that we think make sense based on your product, based on your capacity to fulfill the orders. I mean, that's another thing to think about for smaller companies. And it's, you know, we can be as comprehensive as that of, I got a product, I want to know where I should go, to something as very simple as, so what's the duty rate for me to get my product into the UAE? So that we can look that up and be able to provide the company with that information. So it really runs the gamut. If there's a company that's out there that's interested in doing international, I'd encourage them to touch base with us. I'm sure that we could figure out exactly where you would fit into the services that we have.
Jonathan, thanks for starting this part of the conversation. And Wade, how many companies do you think are out there that could be exporting successfully and are not?
Ooh, I've never been asked that question in that way before. I
don't mean an exact number.
No, I know. I took your meaning there. So like I said, we have about 300 that we know are exporting because they're members of the organization. We probably work with another 300 that that are doing business internationally but haven't paid their membership fee, but we're still working with them. I have probably another 200 or 300 more, I would say. I mean, the Department of Commerce says that there are 2,200 exporters in this state. The problem with that number is that it's largely self-reported. And if you have delusions of grandeur and you sold something to a Canadian tourist one time and you called yourself an exporter, you get included in that number. I would say probably, you know, maybe 200 or 300 companies that could probably do it.
All right.
Above and beyond who already are.
Peter, in Portland, go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Yeah, thank you. I just got back from an extended stay in Australia and New Zealand, and one of the issues in New Zealand, it's become a political issue, is the emphasis is so much on exporting the goods made in New Zealand, especially, that you can't buy the stuff in New Zealand. For instance, the kiwi fruit growing capital of the world is like 110 miles south of Auckland. And you can't buy a kiwi fruit in New Zealand because they export everything. And is that happening here in this country, that everything's going to be exported, or the emphasis is on exportation, so it's going to become almost impossible to buy it here?
Okay, Peter, what do you guys think?
No, I don't think so. I think I look at export as an opportunity. I don't look at it as my entire business portfolio. I think that certainly we can offer certain products other countries can't offer, but I don't think our focus is strictly on export and moving, you know, all our goods and services out of the, you know, goods out of the country. It's a complement to what we do domestically and what we do in our restaurants.
Wait.
And I would say too that just the relative sizes of the New Zealand economy versus the U.S. economy. I mean, we export 5% of what we make mm-hmm. here in Maine. The rest of it goes either stays in Maine or goes to other parts of the United States. A place like New Zealand, that is, you know, 4 or 5 million people on an island in the middle of the Pacific, if they're with an advanced economy, if they're going to sustain themselves, they have to be looking at export opportunities, or else they're not going to go anywhere.
Sure, but related to his question, yeah, there are the laws of supply and demand. And isn't the reason Maine lobster has been more expensive for people in Maine to buy because there's more demand in the rest of the world? At least that's what I read. No answers there? Okay. Peter, thanks for your call. We'll move on to Steve, who is calling from Bangor. Hi, Steve. Go ahead.
Hi, great show, Jennifer. Yeah, what Emily said was what Mr. Diabo, who's the chairman of the board of Armskip, you know, the big blue box company in downtown Portland on Commercial Street, he said the main brand is so renowned and cherished, especially the natural resources of seafood, vegetables, and wood. But he said you got to stop shipping raw materials. you got to start processing. He said, I've eaten all over downtown Portland. He goes, there's great foodies here. Somebody's got to come up with a way to, you know, finish it, because you're just competing with raw materials of everybody else, but they don't have the main brand and you do. And he talked about how soon he could, you know, ship through his containers. But, you know, I hear this all the time, and this was at a main expo symposium in downtown Portland, and I just don't understand. It's so frustrating to listen that either the legislators or the business or the people that get the thing together, what Emily said, we need to start ramping up to process our resources so we're not giving it away to someone else to say, you know, we're processing Maine lobster like in Canada. I think isn't Canada the largest lobster processor in the world?
Excuse me? Yes, Steve. And so, Emily, didn't Maine law change recently to allow more processing than had been before?
It did in terms of processing oversized lobsters that came down from Canada, allowing Maine processors to process product that was not allowed to be caught and kept here in Maine.
All right. Well, we are going to take another quick break. We'd love to hear your questions about exporting Maine products abroad. But before we take that break, a word about tomorrow's Maine Calling. The topic is going to be helping those with intellectual or developmental disabilities. So email your comments or questions to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet us, or post to our Facebook page. You're listening to Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Freemasons in Maine, supporting Maine Public Radio's efforts to provide knowledge, wisdom, and entertainment to the people of Maine. And Maine Senior Guide, hosting the Aging Parents Forum at Freeport High School April 7th. Registration at maineseniorguide.com.
In comments and in tweets, Trump is attacking Mexico. He says Mexico does very little to keep Latin American migrants out of the U.S.
Mexico has got to help us at the border. They flow right through Mexico. They send them into the United States. Can't happen that way.
Mexico says it already cooperates with the U.S. on migration. We'll hear more of the country's response this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
And join us for All Things Considered from 4 to 6:30 each weekday evening. And join us at 2 o'clock for World Affairs Program, a panel discussion on the global erosion of trust in this era of fake news and Russian interference in elections. That's World Affairs coming up at 2 o'clock following Maine Calling here on Maine Public Radio.
And welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, Maine Exports. In the studio with me, Wade Merritt, president of the Maine International Trade Center, James Morin, COO and president of sales at Flowfold, and Emily Lane, international sales manager for Luke's Lobster Seafood Company. Join our conversation. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. James, I'm going to ask you a question. Emily asked you during the break, during our last break, where do you export to?
So one of our largest markets is certainly Japan. They were our first market, even though we survived the whole yen not fitting in the wallet scenario. And we're also in South Korea. We're in Russia. We are in, we have accounts in Singapore, Canada, Australia, and then recently Norway. So those relationships are each different. Sometimes it's through a distributor, which orders in bulk and then ships out to the individual stores in the country. In the case of Singapore, we actually have accounts that are direct, and we ship directly to large retail accounts. So, kind of think of it as a Singapore L.L. Bean, if you will. And then sometimes there's agency agreements that you have an individual, sort of almost like a sales rep, who is your agent, who then goes out and sells your product for you, and then that's based on commission structure. So if anyone is listening and is kind of curious about how do I get international and what does that look like, there is no sort of one size-fits-all approach. It's going to depend on the cost of shipping. It's going to depend on those things like tariffs and customs and sort of the market. The market will drive the relationship, but they all will and can make mathematical sense for Maine companies to ship internationally.
And how do you see this growing? Do you see Flowfold as doubling, tripling, even more your export market in the next few years?
I would think that if at some point in the next 2 years, international business is going to be our fastest growing. And the reason is because from a manufacturing standpoint, it's actually very predictable. They order seasonally, they order twice per year. And since in my case, the international accounts are paying for shipping and they're paying for the customs fees and all of that, they place very large orders semi-annually. So I think that as we start to get our feet wet and we start to figure out ways to become more efficient at international sales, and including going to international trade shows, Maine Outdoor Brands is actually a new coalition that's there, that's going to Germany for an international show this June. And there'll be five companies from Maine that are all going together and they're showcasing Maine products in a singular booth. That's something that's really exciting, and we're hoping to do that a lot more often to grow that business.
Wait, do you recommend that a small new company do what Flowfold has done and pretty much get into the international market right from the beginning? I mean, you're talking November 2015 and already in several countries. Is that a good idea to grow with the international markets you're serving?
Well, I think it's an interesting question. It really depends on the product, and it depends on the management team, and because this takes a fair amount of intestinal fortitude, shall we say, particularly when you are in an early stage, when you're in an early stage of growth. But I think what I would advise for a company that's even remotely thinking about it is start planning for it early, even if you're not going to be in a position where, like Flowfold, you're in 6 or 8 or 10 markets right off the bat. You should be thinking about how you're going to get there early if that's something that you're thinking might even possibly be in your plans.
When you put together that list for Flowfold, when the Maine International Trade Center put together the list, what are you looking at? I mean, I know that your billfolds are marketed as being very slender. You can put them in the front pocket. Are you looking for countries where there's a demand for billfolds to be put in the front pocket, or are you looking at something else?
Well, I guess we should have been looking for countries that have currency that's the same shape and size as the U.S. dollar.
Right.
That might have been a good start. We're looking for countries that have similar, generally similar purchasing power to the U.S. I wouldn't have probably been advising that we're looking at a developing country, but we're looking at a place that has relatively high disposable income. We were looking at places that had sort of a boating culture so that we could play off the sailcloth angle or outdoor recreation. We are proudly supporting Maine Outdoor Brands' efforts at the show in Germany, largely for that reason, because we think that those types of products that are made in Maine will sell well there.
Emily, I wanted to ask you what Luke's Lobster Seafood Company was looking for when trying to decide where to put the shacks. Obviously, people need to have some discretionary income, but was there something else, too?
I think, too, that there is certainly a lobster roll craze going on right now in Asia. And I think that the focus was on really figuring out what particular areas were the most popular. I think you also see in South Korea, as well as certainly in China, but certainly in, I would say, predominantly South Korea, that real interest in lobster rolls. I know we participate in a lot of the international trade missions. We do the Brussels show. We do also the Boston Seafood Show. We get a lot of leads from those shows, as well as a chance to meet with our customer base. We'll be going to Brussels in several weeks. We also participate in the Maine International Trade Center workshops, as well as their focused workshops with bringing buyers in. But I think that, it's all about, where is that, obviously, that expendable income, but also where is that interest in a particular product type. And I think you've seen this, as I say, just this craze, more companies coming, wanting to know where they can buy lobster meat so they can start their own lobster roll companies. There's a lobster restaurant now called the Lobster Hub in South Korea that's just simply focused on value-added lobster products.
And just to kind of add on, I don't want sort of this idea to be misconstrued as a cavalier kind of business approach, right? I think that there are ways to mitigate risk. And what I would say is changing the wallet so it's three millimeters or a centimeter taller so it fits the Japanese yen, that's a micro change. But when I worked with MITC, there was no macro changes, right? They looked for countries that had a very active, young, outdoor enthusiastic population that was willing to spend money and had that expendable money to go and do things what Flowfold has considered everyday adventure, day hikes, festivals, those types of things. So I would encourage, again, that, you know, take that plunge and do some research, figure out if there is a market, figure out if your products, and you don't have to change yourself drastically to get into that market. And if, you know, if the math doesn't work or if the market's not there, I'm certainly not encouraging anyone to put a, you know, square peg into a round hole. But if it is, you know, do some research, reach out to me directly, and I'll tell you some of the tips and tricks.
You know, I think in Luke's Lobster Restaurant Group certainly did a lot of research and a lot of legwork before they decided where they were going to establish their shacks internationally.
I have a tweet from Scott. What is Maine's largest export right now?
It's undoubtedly, well, it depends on whether you're asking me what the product or the industry is, which is a fine distinction. The largest export product, sole export product, is actually sitting next to me here to my left. It's the lobster industry with about $470 million worth of exports last year. The forest products industry as a whole, the stuff that's made out of trees, is actually the largest single industry. But that includes like pulp, paper, and lumber.
Okay. But it's also interesting to note that of the lobsters landed in Maine, which represented 80% of the total U.S. lobster landed, live lobster comprised the majority of what was exported, with only $6.3 million in value for frozen products. So there's still a long way to go for the frozen product industry. And that's a challenge that I think a lot of us who market internationally have, is that in China, you know, we talk about China has an insatiable appetite for lobster, but most of what goes into China is still live lobster.
An email from Orpheus. Is there any effort to build training programs for developing international connections through the education system in Maine?
Interesting you should ask, because I was just participated in a webinar for a class in international relations at the University of Southern Maine, talked about my experience in export over the last 25 years, some of the challenges, some of the rewards, and got some really good feedback from some of the students. I really think it's important to reach out to universities, also to young people in the industry, to bring them along, mentor them in terms of giving them exposure to what some of these international opportunities are. I have a real passion for what I do, and I think that, you know, that sort of lends itself to young people really getting enthusiastic about the whole idea of export.
Okay, well, we have a call from Township 32. Go ahead, you're on Maine Calling.
Yeah, I'm a long-term blueberry grower, like 43 years, and I guess when I tuned in, I was hoping there would be a little bit of a discussion about, you know, the fact that blueberries have been exported for a long time. But given the current situation in the blueberry. Yeah, hi.
Do you have your radio on by chance?
I do, and I'll turn it down. I'm sorry. I was just trying to listen. But no, I guess I just was hoping that blueberries would be part of this discussion. There's kind of a real downturn in the blueberry industry right now that increases in exports would probably improve the situation. And I realized the lobster industry is struggling with the blueberry industry, but I really kind of hope to hear something about blueberries as part of this program. And
well, it's an interactive program, so you just inserted wild blueberries into the conversation. Indeed, Jennifer Mitchell has also done a story featuring Wyman's. You can find that on our Facebook page and also on our Maine Calling webpage. But Wade, frozen blueberries, wild blueberries, a big part of Maine's export, especially food export strategy.
It is, and I think it's definitely an industry that that could do well overseas. It already is doing well overseas. It's fairly small in comparison to the lobster industry, but they have been active. Jennifer Mitchell's great story about Wyman's about their move into the Asian markets. I think there's a lot of room for growth for blueberries there. It's a matter of, I think, getting the industry overseas and getting them plugged in with those opportunities and getting a chance to meet with the buyers face-to-face in those overseas markets. I think the lobster industry is a great model for potential success and roadmap for that industry.
All right. We have an email from Teresa. What do you think about exporting ice cream to Iceland? We've got gelato going to Australia.
We do have gelato going to Australia. We have got... none of my fellow panelists want to bail me out on this one. I think it's a great idea. I was particularly impressed with the story about Gelato Fiasco. They're also a member of ours and a company that we've done a lot of work with. In, you know, talk about you think your international strategy is going to look one way of putting a bunch of ice cream in a box and sending it overseas, and it turns into something quite different. There are ways to do this and approach it. Iceland obviously is hot right now, pun totally intended. Mm-hmm. Iceland's hot right now for the main economy. There are lots of people who are around and able to help make that happen if somebody's really interested in doing that.
All right. And we'll go to Matt on Facebook. One of Maine's best exports, he has that in quote, is our amazing summer camps. Kids, teens, and also adult staff come from all over the U.S. and around the world to spend summers in Maine. Many return the following years, and they all leave with an affinity of all things Maine. So a different way of looking at this export conversation here on Maine Calling today. We just have a few seconds left, and Wade, I'm going to turn to you again. What makes a good potential export product?
Something with wide appeal. I think a company that is committed to what it means to do export. I think the commitment needs to come from the top down, can't come from the bottom up. And I think that people who are adventurous and ready for a challenge. As James has said, it is a big world out there with a whole lot of potential consumers and people to buy your products. It should be part of your growth strategy as you're beginning, but certainly as you're considering growth.
All right. Well, thank you all. And again, I encourage folks to go into the Maine Calling Facebook page or web page to see Jennifer Mitchell's terrific series highlighting some Maine companies and the creative ways that they are exporting. Here today with me, Emily Lane, International Sales Manager for Luke's Lobster Seafood Company, Wade Merritt, President of the Maine International Trade Company, and James Morin, COO and President of Sales of Flowfold. Flowfold. John Keimel ran the board today. Owen Manahan answered your calls. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.